Attack Hug by Penny. This is for Abby Lee for More Joy Day 2012. She wanted Ray's band trying to hug him and Ray taking a while to catch on. It took him a while to notice because Frank had given up on respecting personal space somewhere around the third basement show, and Ray was kind of used to the odd knee or elbow or stray strand of dyed hair getting in his face. But this was different. Frank was burrowing into his side, head on his shoulder, as the credits of Stargate Atlantis rolled. "Frank," Ray said, "have you been smoking up?" "No," Frank looked offended, or at least the top of his head did. "There's spiders in this episode. I'm just being prepared." And it wasn't like Ray minded, so he switched his drink to the other hand and hummed along with the strings. The next night, Frank was right there again, head on his shoulder, but Mikey flopped down on the other side of him and flopped his legs right into Ray's lap. "Is there something wrong with the other sofa?" Ray asked, confused. "You can see the TV better from here," Mikey explained. "True," Frank piped up, nodding his head. Ray spat some of Frank's hair out of his face. "I can't switch the TV on now, though," he pointed out. "I got it." Mikey dug around for the remote and pressed play, and Ray forgot the weirdness as they launched into a discussion of just how much the third season of Heroes sucked. Gerard hugged him the next morning in the little kitchenette as the Ohio cornfields rolled by. "Coffee, amazing," he said, taking the pot and topping his cup up, then hugging Ray. And well, yes, Gerard was free with his affection, and it was pretty good coffee, he supposed. After show hugs were, of course, just what they did, especially after a show like the one that night, when it felt less like playing the guitar and more like funneling everything the crowd felt out through his fingers and strings, and he was in the middle of a gross, sweaty, ecstatic four-way tangle of arms as the lights went down. But, Ray thought, as Mikey wormed an arm round him the next day as they were discussing set lists, something had to be going on. "Mikey?" he asked. Mike's expression didn't change at all. "My hands are cold," he said. "You were just sitting next to Deweese," Ray made it a question. "He can keep his fucking cold hands to himself," Deweese put in. "You guys are all being really..." Ray waved the hand that wasn't trapped under Mikey's. "Huggy." Jared looked a bit stricken, like no one had told him it might be part of his contract to hug the lead guitarist. Gerard beamed at him. "We just want you to know we appreciate you," he said, and Frank nodded quickly. "Because we totally do," he said, "after that article last week, you know." It took Ray a moment to remember. They did so much press, and then he realised what they meant. "Wait," he said, trying to remember the quote. "The one that said, my precision and attention to detail caused problems with the punk outlook of the rest of you." It had been a long, weird interview, cut to pieces and twisted round. "Yes," Gerard said. "They wouldn't like print a retraction or anything, but we wanted to show you we don't think that." "But I know that," Ray said, confused. "Of course I do. And anyone who thinks I'm a perfectionist hasn't seen you draw, or the way Frank sets his gear up, or seen how Mikey writes." "So you're not in need of validation?" Gerard asked. "G had plans for the next live show, and costumes and everything," Frank continued. "He called Brian and was talking guitar solos." Ray grinned. "Costumes are fun," he said. "But you don't need to worry. I'm fine." "Good," Gerard said, and shoved Frank aside so he could sit down, kind of half on his map and half on Ray's own. "Don't think you're getting out of hugs, though, just in case." Ray lifted his arm up so Gerard could snuggle under it. "I guess I'll cope," he said.
"Dentists Will Never Hurt You" by Penny. This is a More Joy Day pamphlet for MVX Malice, who wanted Frank and Gerard working in a dentist's office. It kind of turned into a sort of children's health centre, but there are dentists. So I hope you like it. There was a tiny child hiding behind his examination chair. Gerard crouched down and looked the boy in his tear-stained face. "Are you here for an eye exam?" he asked. "Where are your parents?"
"I'm hiding," the boy whispered.
"Okay." Gerard sat on the floor. He didn't have an eye exam for 20 minutes. "Who are you hiding from?"
"The dentist."
The boy was twisting the cuffs of his sweater in his hands.
"Frank?" Gerard asked. "Frank's not going to hurt you." "There's needles. My sister said..."
Gerard sighed. "I'm Gerard," he said. "What's your name?"
"Jamie,"
the boy said. He was still huddled against the chair, showing no signs of wanting to move.
"Have you seen..."
Spencer, Frank's trainee, pushed the door open, and Gerard turned round and put his finger to his lips and got up slowly.
"Frank's run away?"
he asked. Spencer flicked his hair out of his eyes. "I've already been to physio and hearing, and Pete's not seen him, and Greta's with the patient, so he can't be there. And I lost him, Gerard! Frank's going to kill me!" Gerard smiled. Spencer almost never lost his cool. "It's okay," he said, jerking his head to where Jamie was hiding. "He's here. He's scared of needles."
"Oh," Spencer said. "Ugh, I should have put paper over the tray."
"It's okay," Gerard said. "Just go get Frank for me." Spencer nodded and left.
"You ran pretty far, huh?" Gerard asked Jamie. "Your parents will be looking for you." "I don't want to go back," Jamie said. "There's needles! Shelley said!"
"I don't like needles either," Gerard said. "But if you're just having a checkup, I promise there's no needles."
"Dentists are scary,"
Jamie said stubbornly.
"Frank's not," Gerard grinned. "Frank's really cool, promise."
There was a knock at the door. "Will you talk to him?" Gerard says. "Here, where there's no needles." Jamie nodded slowly, but didn't come out of his hiding place. Frank had taken his white coat off and had his hands hooked through the thumb holes in his sweater. He looked adorable, and Gerard reminded himself about appropriate work behaviour.
"Have you got my runaway?"
he asked. "Jamie," Gerard said. "Frank's here." Frank crouched down.
"You had us worried," he said. "Though you did choose the best room to hide in. Gerard has the best stickers."
"It's true," Gerard said. "I do. Frank just has toothbrushes."
"I don't want needles," Jamie said. "Shelley told me..."
"No needles," Frank interrupted. "I'm just going to look at your teeth. Promise." Jamie bared his teeth.
"That's a good start," Frank said. "How about we go back and look at the rest of them?"
"Frank'll take an x-ray," Gerard said. "You get to see your bones."
"Cool,"
Jamie said. "Let's go, kiddo." Frank held out his hand. Jamie didn't take it, but he stuck close to Frank, and they got to the door, and Spencer took over and ushered him down the corridor.
"Thanks," Frank said, and stepped up quickly and kissed him where no one could see. "For finding my runaway."
"That's 3 you owe me now," Gerard said. "No one's running away from ophthalmologists."
"You saying I'm scary?" Frank glared, and Gerard kissed the tip of his nose.
"Not to me," he said, "but I'm kind of used to you." How Many More Times? By Penny. This is for Desfinado for More Joy Day 2012, and she wanted Ray and Frank arguing about their favourite Led Zeppelin song. I hope you like it. Gerard could hear the shouting the second he opened the door to the bus. Frank, no surprise there. And, he listened carefully, Ray. That was unusual.
"What's going on?" he asked, worried.
"They're arguing," Mikey gestured in the direction of the closed studio door. "Best Zeppelin song."
"Already?"
Gerard asked. Mikey turned the page of his book and shook his head.
"Spinnier, at least," he said, shrugging.
Frank's shouts of, "For serious?" echoed through the door.
followed by an angry-sounding guitar riff from, Gerard thinks, Ray. They tried to pick one per album, and then it kind of disintegrated. Mikey says as Gerard presses his ear to the door to try and work out at what point of the argument they'd gotten to. It was all right until they got to three.
Gallows Pole?
Gerard guessed. Gallows Pole, Mikey nodded. It is Frank's favourite from that one, Gerard said. He tentatively tried the door handle just as a blast of feedback from both guitars made Mikey flinch. Yeah, well, Ray doesn't agree, obviously. Peacemaker it is then, Gerard said, and briefly regretted not grabbing his earplugs. The back studio sounded like a classic rock version of dueling banjos. How can you argue against this? Frank was saying, and he played the intro to Whole Lot of Love, dirty and fast and perfect. I'm not, Ray said, nodding his head. I'm just saying that from a blues influence point of view. But that just reduces them to their first album, Frank protested. What about Black Dog? That's more about Plant, not the guitars, Ray said. You saying vocals don't count, Gerard put in. They both turned to look at him. Gee, Frank said, instantly, scooting over so that Gerard could sit down. Back me up here. Ray is so wrong. It's a classic, Ray said. They're called classics for a reason. They didn't even write it, Frank protested. Well, if you believe the stories, neither did Robert Johnson, Ray snapped back. Come on, Gerard, you know you agree with me. It has to be Travelling Riverside Blues. The influences! And he started to pick out the intro, every note clear as a bell, even without the amp. Gerard nodded and grinned. His band was fucking amazing. That was the guy that sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads, he said. Robert Johnson, not Jimmy Page, Ray frowned. Right. It was a pretty cool concept. So, what does that have to do with... He waved his hand at Frank, holding his guitar flat on his lap, and Ray. Because Ray's wrong, Frank said. I'm just saying, I don't think you can discount it straight away like you do, Ray said stubbornly. He had the set to his jaw that Gerard recognised from too many late nights in the studio, and if they were already at this point in the argument, there was really no hope for it. Gerard said, I like the one that goes... What? Frank asked. You know... I don't know. They made a lot of songs. I can't keep track of them. They kind of all sound the same, you know? He waited. They kind of all... Frank said, slowly. Right, Ray, you get the albums in order. Mikey! Mikey stuck his head around the door. Popcorn, Cheetos, cookies, Frank pointed vigorously at each word. And you, he said, pointing at Gerard, sit your ass down and prepare to be schooled. Me and Ray will show you. Gerard leant his head against the back of the bus and smiled as the first bars of Good Times, Bad Times floated out of the speakers. Never failed, he thought. It was only a kiss. It was only a kiss. This is recorded for Rainy Days for More Joy Day 2012. She wanted, and I quote, Spencer wants to know what kissing Brendan is like. It's not like a crush or anything. He's just curious. Really, really curious. That's all. So I hope this fits with what you were thinking about, Rennie. You would have to be blind, Spencer thinks, to look at Brendan and not wonder. To look at that mouth, so plush and full, the way it shapes the words and sings, and not think, what would those lips feel like pressed against mine? It's just idle curiosity. Something that flits into his mind now and again, whenever he's looking at Brendan, or whenever Brendan is kissing someone else, which he does more often than Spencer really likes, although that's just because you can never trust fans sometimes. Brendan should really be more careful about who he kisses. It's just odd, that he knows so much about Brendan. He knows absolutely everything that there is to know about him, except this one thing. And it's also odd that he knows it about so many other people, so many of his other friends, but doesn't know it about the person he spends almost all of his time with. He knows what Ryan Kiss is like. Everything from fumbling and sloppy, but still exciting, 13 years old and hiding under the covers, to comforting and brotherly and chaste, even now, even after everything, that little part of Ryan that's still his. He knows, although he should probably feel worse about it than he does, how Ian kisses, sloppy and drunk, and tinged with a kind of hero worship the first time they turned up backstage at a Cab concert, Ian flinging himself at Spencer, three sheets to the wind, and fitting his lips wet and messy and exciting over his. They don't talk about it anymore. He's not even sure that Ian remembers, except that sometimes he'll catch him looking at him, and then that light flush of pink over Ian's cheekbones that makes Spencer think, oh, and we really should discuss this at some point. And he knows twice how Patrick kisses, how he was gentle and sweet and kind when Spencer, starstruck and fumbling, kissed him the first time they toured together all those years ago, not quite believing that this was Patrick motherfucking Stump, and he was so sweet even then. To now, Patrick shiny and new and euphoric, pressing his lips to Spencer's, forcing them apart with his tongue and curling it round his back teeth. That little bit of Pete he has never quite left behind. Someone who will still, after everything, kiss a pretty boy. So he knows it about more people than you would think, but he doesn't know this one thing about Brendan. And it's kind of driving him mad with curiosity. Spencer likes puzzles, but he likes ones that he can solve, and he cannot think about how Brendan would kiss. It's getting to be kind of a problem. He's losing his train of thought sometimes. Until one afternoon, they're just sitting, hanging out, after the tour's over. And Brendan's head is lolling on the back of the sofa as they watch something on television that neither of them are really paying attention to. He hasn't shaved, and his stubble has come in dark round his lips, and somehow it makes them look even fuller and even plusher. And somehow, Spencer just can't think anymore, can't have this puzzle unsolved. And he thinks, Brendan's never ever really told him no. Not when it's important. Not when it's something that he has his power to give him. So he taps him on the shoulder and says, hey, Brendan. And Brendan tilts his head and looks at him. And before Spencer can overthink it or ask him or be awkward, he tilts his head forward and presses his lips to Brendan's. They are soft. Softer than they look, plush and giving. And Brendan goes, and kisses him back. And it's nothing Spencer could ever, ever have imagined. And it's far, far more than idle curiosity, he realises, as Brendan pushes him back onto the sofa and puts all thoughts of all those other kisses right out of his mind. Monroeville Sunsets by Penny. This is a More Joy Day Pogfit clip for Sadie Ann. He wanted something about Ray from the Nice Work If You Can Get It universe, one that's set in the 1930s. I hope this suits. It was the first really hot day of summer. The heat was radiating up from the sidewalk through the thin soles of Ray's shoes, and the short walk from his place to King's was enough to have the hair sticking to the back of his neck, sweat trickling down beneath his shirt collar. Not for the first time, he missed the summers in Jersey. It was just as hot, but there was at least still the faint chance of a breeze. King's was cooler, just, but he could already tell that it was going to be a hot and sticky night. time for slow dance and intrigue, and music hot enough to burn. Patrick was in a business meeting with Pete and Spencer, so he had the hall to himself. He could feel a new song in his veins and picked it out, a slow, sultry phrase to get bodies moving and secrets exchanged. The guitar rang out in the empty room and he played it through twice, already hearing the counterpoint in trumpet and clarinet, and the clear, bell-like tones of Brendan's piano. He slipped the slide onto his finger and tried it with that, slow and sensual, something to put a sway in the hips and a strut in the stride. Enough to make Spencer dance, and the rest of them pretend they didn't see the way that Brendan couldn't take his eyes off him. "Play that tonight, and everyone will riot." Ray jerked his head up. He'd thought he was alone, and that voice, that accent, didn't fit. "Frank," he said slowly. Frank moved into the light. His hair was clipped shorter than Ray'd ever seen it, but the mischievous grin was the same. "Toro," Frank said. Then he was shaking Ray's hand and embracing him quickly. "That was great. One of yours?" "What are you doing here?" Ray asked. He leaned his guitar against the stool and just looked at Frank. He looked like home. "I'm here with G," Frank said. "I'm taking photographs for him." And yes, Ray realised, Frank had his camera around his neck, like always. "Of Chicago?" Ray asked. "I'll let G explain," Frank said. "He's here. Or he should be." "Mikey too?" Ray asked. He loved Chicago. He loved what he did. But they were his brothers, and he'd missed them. "He's still back in Jersey," Frank said. "It's mad there. But he's got this soup kitchen set up, people helping out, doing what they can. You know." Ray nodded. It would be something Mikey would be good at, using his vast network of friends to try and help people, however he could. Gerard peeked in at the door. "Frank! You found him!" "He did." Ray got up and hugged Gerard too. "What are you doing here?" Gerard's fingers were smudged with ink and newsprint, and his pants were shabby at the hem. "The Times hired us," Gerard said. "We'd do a series on Hoovervilles and the New Deal. I had to fight for Frank, but people need to see. Words aren't enough." He had the familiar crusading glow. "You've got time to come and see the show, right? Or are you too busy saving the world?" Ray nudged him with his foot. "Wouldn't miss it," Gerard said. "But if you're going to play that song, it's going to need some lyrics." Ray passed the sheet music across, and Gerard leaned on the top of the piano. Frank made eyes at him until Ray passed in the spare banjo that Brendan kept there, and Gerard said, "Play it again?" Ray plucked out the first phrase, and Frank joined in, and just for a minute, it was like he'd never really left home at all. Morning, by Penny. This is a More Joy Day pulpit lick for Cinder Lily, who wanted Brendan and Spencer in a morning off on tour. Thanks to Bohemia Self for her help with this one. It's early when Brendan wakes, the rest of the bus sleeping and quiet. He's not normally awake this early, but he's starving, so he tiptoes out of the bunks on the hunt for food. Dallin's snoring as usual, and Ian's kicked all the blankets off, one sheet twisted round his legs. Brendan, feeling maternal, covers him back over. Maybe they should buy him a sleeping bag. The kitchenette's filled with pale golden morning light. It is not, however, filled with anything resembling breakfast. "Morning," Spencer says softly, coming out of the bunks. "Did I wake you?" Brendan asks, opening the fridge. Nothing there, either. "No," Spencer scratches his shoulder. "I was awake. I think it's the sun." "We have no food," Brendan says. "Like, we have maybe two bowls of cereal, but that's it." "Come on." Spencer tosses him his hoodie from over the chair. "Let's go get breakfast out somewhere." They leave Dallin and Ian sleeping because they take forever to get ready. And Brendan's hungry now, damn it. The bus is parked up near a streetcar stop, and they ride it to the centre of town. Spencer presses a hand to the small of Brendan's back as they climb up the steps, steering him in the right direction. The sun is pale and the sky is pink at the edges, fading into violet and blue. It'll be hot later, Brendan recognises, from years of Vegas summers, but for now it's warm and clear, and they have nowhere to be until tonight. Spencer has a sixth sense for pastries, even though he doesn't have a particularly sweet tooth, and he points out a cafe down the street, tables already set outside under striped umbrellas. He takes a seat, stretches his long legs out under the table so he kicks against Brendan's ankle. Brendan nudges back and doesn't move his foot. They watch people straggle back and forth, early morning commuters, kids laden with school bags. "I think I want tea," Spencer says, looking at the menu, "and one of those ham and cheese things, and apple juice. Maybe granola." "That's far too healthy," Brendan says. "They have Nutella pancakes." "Nutella pancakes." Spencer smiles and doesn't say anything, but he does steal half of Brendan's pancakes when they come, and sticks his tongue out to lick the chocolate syrup off his cheek. "You've still got some..." Brendan gestures, and Spencer tilts his head so Brendan can wipe his face with a napkin dipped in ice water. By the time they're ready to go, the town has woken up some, shop awnings opening and streets filling up. They wait at the cash register to pay, and Spencer shakes his head when Brendan puts his hand in his pocket and pays for them both. "My treat," he says. Brendan kisses his cheek absently. "Thanks," he says. Then he sees the smile at the corner of Spencer's mouth, his eyes blue as the sky, and he realises. He kisses him a second time, on the mouth. "Thanks," he says again. "You're welcome," Spencer replies. Postcard Perfect by Penny. Recorded for Night Tracer for More Joy Day 2012. She wanted Pete and Patrick in a long-distance relationship or a long-distance friendship. I hope you like it. It was always a thing that took the most getting used to, after tours, after recording. Going from having Pete so close at all hours of the day and night, to sometimes, a whole country away. And, of course, he missed everyone, but he missed Pete more, always had done. He was his best friend, after all. Between tours, and with Pete in LA, they were almost permanently attached to computers and cell phones. Her friendship was fragments of text messages like fan poetry, snatched phone calls, 100 different Skype backdrops. And every tour, it felt like he was stockpiling Pete time for the next time they were apart. It wasn't something he really thought about. Pete was magnetic, and they were drawn to each other. Best friends, that was all. And then, suddenly, it seemed, he was touring by himself. The sharp triumph of doing it after so long was heady, all-consuming. He found he didn't so much miss Pete on stage as he did everywhere else. If there was a tour, sound checks and cramped sleeping and midnight diners, there should be Pete, too. He started getting mail from Pete, letters and packets waiting at concert venues, torn pages of exercise books covered in familiar scribble, just things like, "You'll be great tonight," or "Love the new bow tie." Postcards, a guitar strap covered in penguins, a drawing from Bronx. Patrick sent mail the old-fashioned way too, scenic postcards, or demo CDs in paper cases, flyers from record stores and basement shows with "You should be here" scribbled on the back. It was kind of like having a pen pal, Patrick thought. Tiny bits of Pete to carry around with him, to go with all the other bits, tears and smiles and kisses, they collected through the years. It still wasn't enough, though, and they still ended up calling each other more often than not. "Can't live without me?" Pete asked one evening. Patrick pressed the phone to his ear like that could bring him closer. "I just miss you," Patrick said. "Doing this without you is weird, is all." "No one's giving you crap, are they?" Pete sounded about ready to fly out and punch someone. "No, And if they were, what makes you think I can't look after myself? Patrick asked.
True. I think I still have the bruises from the last argument, slugger.
Pete sounded so fond. Patrick had an unexpected stab of something like homesickness.
Hey, Pete put in after a few seconds of silence. Hey, Patrick. You know, I'm so proud of you. Right?
You tell me that pretty much all the time, Patrick said, because he did. Not that he needed it. He knew it. No matter what people tried to get him to say.
You deserve to hear it all the time, Pete said softly. Everyone's seeing it now, how fucking talented you are. What I always saw.
Patrick had got a lot better at taking compliments over the years, but he still laughed a bit awkwardly.
I love you too, he said.
You better, Pete said. Now go hit that after party, rockstar.
Yeah, yeah. Patrick beamed and stepped aside from one of the venue techs to squeeze past. I'll talk to you soon.
He felt warm and happy for the rest of the evening. But it had been a good show, so that was to be expected. He was looking at his phone and the latest picture Pete had texted him, some spindly green things that were apparently tomato vines, 2 days later, and the warm feeling was still there. He was standing in the middle of the bus looking at Pete's attempts to get back to nature when it hit him.
Fuck, he said softly and sat down. He had to laugh because apparently, after all this time, he'd gone and fallen in love with Pete Wentz.
He texted back, don't give up the day job, and the spike of happiness at the text alert with Pete's reply just confirmed it. He felt kind of foolish for missing it. It kind of settled into his bones, sudden and right, just how it had always felt when he got the setting for Pete's lyrics right, and how, he thought, how the hell had you managed to miss this? 2 turns later, he was halfway through Spotlight when a movement at the side of the stage caught his eye, and he stumbled over the words, because there was Pete! Not in LA or New York, not even back home, but there, hands stuffed into his pockets and grinning at him. Patrick took a breath and carried on, covering over the stumble as best he could, because the happy, mellow warmth had just been replaced with a rapidly uncoiling spiral of want, like seeing Pete in the flesh, not on the screen, had suddenly brought it all into focus. By the end of the set, Patrick could feel Pete's eyes on him like a weight, and he made a decision. He leant forward into the mic.
I think we've got time for one more song, he said over the cheers. Now, we've been doing some different classics on tour, but I've got a friend in the audience tonight.
He risks a quick glance side stage, and Pete's still there, still smiling.
So, I thought I'd change things up a bit. I've been really trying, baby. Trying to hold back this feeling for so long. And if you feel like I feel, baby, come on. Oh, come on. Oh, let's get it on. Let's get it on.
He handed his guitar off to someone as soon as the lights went down and caught Pete by the wrist, tugged him into a corner, and kissed him. Pete made a gasp against his mouth, but snaked a hand round the back of his neck and held him in place when Patrick tried to pull away, moving his mouth slowly against his, then pulling gently away, resting his forehead against Patrick's collarbone and breathing deeply. Not that I'm complaining, he mumbled into Patrick's shirt. But why now? Patrick stroked Pete's back, nose at his ear, looked at his best friend, at the guy who'd seen this, what he was now, in what he was then, looked at Pete, at the whole beautiful fucking mess of him, and said, I guess we're both finally in the same place.
Skeleton Crew by Penny. This is a More Joy Day podficlet for Girl Phenom, who said she just wanted something from Bandom. I hope this suits. Ryan's not sure how he got here. Here being his own sofa, in skeleton pyjamas, with Gerard Way outlining the virtues of Back to the Future, lit cigarette waving around as he gestures. Gerard's pyjamas, it must be noted, are mummy bandages print. He turned up 40 minutes ago, thrust the pyjamas at him, and said, "Get changed, we're doing this properly," and Ryan thinks he hasn't actually stopped talking since. Gerard pauses to find somewhere to stub his cigarette out, and Ryan takes the opportunity to ask, "Why are you here?" "Because there is no reason in the world Gerard should be here." Ryan's still not sure he's not hallucinating. "I heard you might need someone to talk to," Gerard says. He gives up looking for an ashtray and pinches the cigarette out, wincing. "How do you even know where I live?" Ryan feels like he's missing something vital here. "Ways and means." Gerard smiles, showing all his teeth, because he's exactly the kind of person, Ryan realises, who'll make stupid puns and then laugh at them. "It's kind of refreshing. I don't know what you mean." Hobo licks at his hand and he picks her up and puts her in his lap. "You were wearing pyjamas at 3 p.m. Gerard says. "I'm wearing pyjamas now," Ryan feels compelled to point out. "But these are," Gerard waves a hand, "therapeutic. So we're going to watch this, and if you think of anything you want to say, you can go straight ahead." Ryan doesn't quite know the procedure for kicking the subject of several adolescent fantasies out of your house, so he just sits back and lets Gerard press play. It's kind of nice having someone here, even just for background noise. He's been alone with his thoughts too much. After Marty demonstrates Chuck Berry at the Enchantment Under the Sea dance, Gerard turns to him and says, "Don't give up." "I'm not going to," Ryan says, because he's not going to do anything stupid. "No, no," Gerard shakes his head, his newly dyed hair falls into his face. "I mean, with the band." "I had two give up on me," Ryan says, hearing the bitterness in his own voice. Gerard's arm is round his shoulders now, and Ryan thinks for one moment that he is daydreaming, although the last time he dreamt this, he was much younger and still had a band. He lets himself go, resting against Gerard. He smells of smoke. "You give good hugs," he mumbles. He's missed the contact. "It's a dad thing," Gerard says. "I wouldn't know," Ryan says, and Gerard's arm tightens further. "It's still there," Gerard says after a few minutes. "You can start again." "Can I?" Ryan says stubbornly, because at the moment there doesn't seem to be much point. Nothing lasts. "I think the actual question," Gerard says over the laughter from the TV screen, "is whether you cannot do it. It's who you are, and that doesn't change. I can guarantee you've got songs in here somewhere," and he taps the top of Ryan's head. "You might want to think about sharing them with someone again." Ryan snorts. "Still saving lives." But he doesn't move out of the circle of Gerard's arms. "Hey," Gerard says. "Not everyone gets the personal service, you know. Now, I think you should heat up that pie I bought. We've still got two more movies to get through." Starting with a Bang by Penny. This is recorded for Me Maneuver for More Joy Day 2012. She wanted something with Frank, Mikey and Gerard, and I know that she's fond of AUs, so I hope she likes this one. Frank meets Mikey at a Faculty of Sciences mixer the first week of his PhD. Mikey's wearing an anthrax t-shirt under his lab coat and quite clearly reading a Batman comic tucked inside the huge fucking health and safety manual they were all saddled with. He's also, crucially, not one of the mathematicians who are currently boring Frank's ears off about the purity of abstract numbers. "I'm Frank," Frank says. "What are you in for?" "Mikey," Mikey replies. "Acoustical physics. I make really loud noises. You?" Frank grins. "Chemistry. I blow shit up." It turns out that not only does Mikey have excellent taste in music and comic books, but he also spends a lot of time in the same materials lab as Frank, and they soon become friends. Mikey knows every late-night cafe and diner in 5-mile radius, and in return, Frank takes him to his favourite bars and basement clubs, places where the music's so loud you can feel it rattle your bones. Mikey always tries to explain how this happens, but Frank gets pretty used to tuning him out. And when Mikey's girlfriend dumps him halfway through their second semester, Frank doesn't hesitate on collecting Mikey, his bass, and his collection of criminally ugly hats, and moving him into his tiny apartment. His research is already kind of stressful, and he needs some of Mikey's cool, his easy, grounding friendship. Mikey, he learns, needs someone to remind him that water and electricity rarely mix. Frank's beginning to believe all the stories about physicists having no common sense. Frank meets Gerard when Mikey says, "So hey, my brother needs someone to help him with his film project. And can you do that thing with the soap bubbles and the helium?" Gerard turns out to be this whirlwind of red hair and flappy hands, and explains that one of the sections of his reel needs to be an educational program, and that teaching kids about science is really important, okay? There was this girl in his last module who honestly thought dinosaur bones were 6,000 years old and didn't believe in vaccination, and Mikey would only do his thing on sand if someone else was on camera too, and hey, is it really true you can set soap bubbles on fire? Ray, behind the camera, says, "Hey, I'm Ray. Can you stand in that light there? Cool t-shirt." Frank feels kind of odd at the beginning, but it's just like demonstrating stuff to undergrads after a while, and it's also fun. Him and Mikey explaining things like how sympathetic vibrations work, and why you can hold burning soap bubbles without getting burned yourself. He's always enjoyed telling people about aspects of science, and well, it's something different than his endless slaving over his thesis. They even do a little sung introduction to the cartoon Gerard's making to splice into the rest of the show. He has no desire to watch the finished episode, but cheerfully eats the pizza and cheesecake Gerard buys them to say thank you. So, it's kind of a head trip when Gerard turns up at their apartment the day after Frank's thesis defence and hugs the crap out of him, then Mikey, then him again, and says, "We got commissioned!" "Ow," Frank says. He's got a pretty epic hangover. Mikey's fault. Then Mikey see how much he gets to drink after his defence. "That's great, G," Mikey says. He's far more conscious and squeezes Gerard's shoulder. "I knew you would." "Not me," Gerard says. "Us. PBS loved you and Frank." "They want you too." Frank says, because he's not a TV star. He's a chemist. "I was just helping Mikey out, dude." Gerard whirls round and takes Frank's hands in his, looks him deep in the eyes. "Please, Frank, this is important. Think how many people you could reach." "You like the demonstrating best," Mikey put in. "And dude, you're never going to be able to keep your temper enough to get any kind of tenure." Frank hesitates. He's been Dr. Iero less than a day. He's hungover, way too undercaffeinated, and he thinks he's wearing Mikey's shirt. On the other hand, Mikey does kind of have a point. He never really wanted to be an academic. "Can I have a trial period?" he asks. "We're already commissioned for 14 episodes," Gerard says. Both he and Mikey are staring at him with identical expressions of pleading. "Okay," Frank nods. Gerard hugs him again and then slings an arm around Mikey's shoulder as well. "Welcome to show business," he says. Teamwork by Penny. This is a More Joy Day Podfic lit for Gala Apples, who wanted, and I quote,
Ryan and Brendan talking about methods of seducing one Spencer Smith V. Bonus points if it's baby boys because I love high school fic. Well, I hope this suits. We need to work together, Brendan says and drapes himself around Ryan's shoulders. Ryan puts his pen down and tries to look at Brendan. It's kind of hard with his face that close, and he ends up just squinting. With the band? He asks, because he has no idea what Brendan means. I thought last practice went well. It went better than well, if Ryan's honest with himself, and he always is. He knows, that soon they'll have something worth uploading. Not the band. Brendan lets go and flops backwards onto Ryan's bed. His blue t-shirt rides up. The band is awesome. Spencer's awesome. I'm amazing. You're the new Pete Wentz. Brent's steady as anything. No, Spencer. Spencer? Ryan repeats. Brendan gets like this sometimes, and you just have to follow along until he gets to the point and you can jump aboard the conversation. Spencer. Brendan stretches his hands above his head and purrs the word out. You want him. I do too. So we should clearly work together because he's a tough nut to crack and you've got all that inside best friend knowledge. Who says I want him? Ryan studies Brendan's face, all huge eyes and full lips. Duh. Brendan sits up and puts a hand on his wrist. Spencer. As an argument, it's not hugely convincing. But Spencer. So what, like a race to see who can make out with him first? Ryan frowns. He doesn't want Spencer treated like that, like some kind of prize. No, Brendan sits all the way up. Both of us. And Spencer. All of us. He looks so earnest, lower lip jutting out. Greedy, Ryan says. I am reaching for the stars, Ryan Ross. Brendan leans forward and kisses him swiftly. Ryan's too surprised to protest, and anyway, Brendan's lips are soft, and he'd be lying if he said he'd never thought about it. We need a plan of action, Brendan says. Give me a pen. This is a really stupid idea, Ryan says, holding his pen out of reach. You'll look like an idiot, and you'll upset Spencer. I'll write you multisyllabic songs and make you sing them as punishment. You do that anyway, Brendan says. Now, I'm going to split up the list into my tasks and your tasks. He digs a green glitter pen out of his backpack and turns over his Spanish homework and starts to write. Brendan's list, when finished, is all kinds of ridiculous. 1. Tighter jeans. Even for you, Ryan, you can do it. 2. Lots of bending. Because my ass is fantastic, don't front, Ross. 3. Tell him he's awesome a lot. Because he is, so that bit's easy. 4. Snuggles on movie night. 5. Attack hugs. 6. Write a song for him. 7. Shirtless practicing. You know you want to. Ryan privately thinks it's all ridiculous, so underneath he writes, Just ask him, in capital letters. Even though he knows he won't, and neither will Brendan. He does help, though. Slips Spencer his favourite candy whenever they're together at practice. Waits with Brendan as he tries on pair after pair of jeans and buys his own pair. Brendan looks gratifyingly stunned in the changing rooms and they make out for 5 minutes squashed into the cubicle. Think how much better this will be with Spencer, Brendan whispers against his neck as Ryan pets down his back. He doesn't write Spencer a song because his words don't seem to work with happy things and Spencer doesn't deserve the anger and sarcasm that's all he can manage. But he does tell Spencer every practice how good he is, how solid he sounds, how much better the songs are with him. Brendan joins in enthusiastically, and Spencer just flicks his hair out of his eyes, confused, and says, Thanks. Like, he thinks they're making fun of him. The next practice, it's really hot, and Brendan, true to his word, strips his shirt off. Despite pointed eyebrow raises, Ryan does not. Doing it in front of people he knows is somehow different to putting pictures on the internet. It's too real. Too close. He wishes he could, though, because Brendan hugs Spencer after he does a particularly great fill, and Spencer's hand comes up to press on Brendan's back, and Ryan wants to feel that too, Spencer's strong hands on him, and to talk about how smooth Brendan's skin is, and the slip and slide of muscle underneath. "Tonight, movie night," Spencer says after practice. "You guys coming?" "Family thing," Brent frowns. "Can't get out of it." "Brendan? Ryan?" Spencer asks. Brendan tugs his shirt back on. "Can I stay over?" he asks, and Ryan laughs because he's honest to God batting his eyelashes, and Brendan is an idiot. "Sure," Spencer says. "There's room for you and Ryan. No problem." Ryan likes the way Spencer just assumes he'll be staying. They share pizza with Spencer's parents and the twins and carry the soda and popcorn upstairs and sprawl out on the bed. Ryan, then Spencer, then Brendan. They watch Empire Records, followed by Pump Up the Volume, and Ryan leans into Spencer's shoulder and breathes in the scent of his hair and tells himself, stupid Brendan plans aside, he's happy with this. It's stupid to want more. As the credits roll, Spencer stretches and says, air mattress in the cupboard. I'll go get bed linen. The air mattress is a new one, king size, and they have to move furniture before Ryan plugs the pump in and inflates the bed. Brendan strips down to his boxers and hangs his jeans over the back of the chair. Spencer tosses the bed linen to Ryan and disappears into the bathroom to brush his teeth. Ryan makes up the mattress, familiar pillows in red check print, and a comforter worn soft by years of washing. Things as familiar to him as his own bed at home. Hit the lights? He asks, and Brendan does, and crawls in with him. Your plan doesn't seem to be working, he says, proud of how his voice is even. The mattress dips again, and Spencer slides in next to him. His plan kind of sucked, Spencer says, and Ryan freezes because Spencer's hand, on his hip, stroking his skin. You should have just asked. And before Ryan can say, I told you so, Spencer is kissing him, then leaning across him, bare chest pressed to bare chest, to kiss Brendan. Ryan watches them. Seriously, Spencer says after he pulls back. His lips are pink. Brendan's eyes are fluttered closed. I'm a sure thing. Yeah? Ryan manages. Yeah. Spencer kisses his collarbone, his mouth, slow and careful, just like he always is with him. Why do you think I talked my mom into the new air mattress? And Brendan laughs and kisses the back of Spencer's neck and then leans over to kiss Ryan and says, see? I have the very best ideas. When It All Began by Penny. This is a More Joy pamphlet for Cellophane Rhea, who wanted Spencer and Ryan kidfic, however I interpreted it. I hope you like it. It was kind of hard not to guess what it was, but Spencer's mom had still wrapped it all up, and his parents and sisters watched him tear the paper off each drum, pedal, and cymbal. Thank you, thank you, thank you, he said when the last stand was unwrapped and he'd opened his sister's present, which turned out to be drumsticks. He hugged his mom and then his dad, who said, your grandma's bought you drum lessons, so pretend to be surprised. I have to go call Ryan, Spencer said. It's 9 a.m. on Christmas morning, his mom said. You'll sit down and watch the twins open their presents. Spencer shifted and tapped his fingers on his thigh as the girls opened their presents extra slowly on purpose. Hurry up, he said, as Crystal smoothed the wrapping paper from her rollerblades into a rectangle. Don't shout at your sisters, his dad said. I need to find out if Ryan got his guitar, Spencer said. How are we supposed to be rock stars otherwise? Like you'll be rock stars anyway. Jackie stuck her tongue out and Spencer totally regretted buying her that DVD. After breakfast, Ginger said. Spencer had never eaten so quickly in his life, and he was still swallowing the last of his waffle when he dialed Ryan's number. Did you get it? Happy Christmas to you too, Ryan said. Rye! Yes, I got it. Spencer could hear Ryan smile down the phone. She's beautiful. She? Spencer asked. Yes, she. What, you haven't named your drums yet?
Kind of feels weird to name something I'm going to beat the crap out of, Spencer said.
Language, Spencer, his mum called from the kitchen.
You should come over later, Spencer said.
Really?
Ryan tried to sound casual, but Spencer could hear the need. Christmas was pretty bad for Ryan, even with a new guitar.
I'm pretty sure Mum will pick you up on the way back from Grandma's, Spencer said. You can bring your guitar over.
It took Spencer promising to do the dishes for the next 3 days in the end, but they stopped off at Ryan's, and Spencer helped him put the amp in the back of the car. Ryan didn't let his guitar go, even to hug Spencer. Spencer was still trying to get used to Ryan being taller than him, and the neck of the guitar knocked into his shoulder.
In the garage, boys, Ginger said, and not too long.
It took them nearly an hour to put the drum kit together, and Spencer just looked at it for a few minutes. It was so much better than the one in the music store, black and shiny with silver glitter panels on the toms.
You actually going to hit anything? Ryan asked sarcastically.
Like you aren't going to sleep with your guitar tonight, Spencer shot back. They didn't play well, Spencer would be the first to admit. Apparently, 1.5 guitar lessons and a passion for hitting things weren't enough to make you the next Green Day. Spencer had trouble coordinating his hands and feet, and Ryan kept getting too close to the amp and producing squeals of feedback.
We need to practice more, Spencer said after about an hour. His hands and shoulders were hurting. Ryan's fingers were actually bleeding.
Right, Ryan said. Like, 3 times a week, at least. Spencer nodded.
We'll get better, he said, because Ryan looked crestfallen.
He looked sad more and more often now, and Spencer didn't want to be the cause of that.
Course we will, Ryan nodded. This is the start, you'll see.
And looking at the determined set of Ryan's jaw, Spencer believed every word.
Whispered War by Penny. Recorded for her Met for More Joy Day 2012, she wanted Brendan trying to convince Spencer to get him popsicles.
Spence!
It's so quiet that Spencer barely hears the croak over the TV. He turns round and sure enough, there's Brendan leaning in the doorway, blanket wrapped haphazardly round him.
You should be in bed, Spencer frowns.
Brendan's a feverish pink and sweaty and doesn't look like he should be doing anything other than sleeping.
Throat hurts,
Brendan whispers.
Well, that's what happens when you have strep, Spencer said. Go back to bed and stop talking.
Honestly, you'd think his voice wasn't his job.
It really hurts and I'm hot.
Brendan drags the blanket with him as he makes his way to the sofa. Spencer can feel the heat radiating off of him.
Did you take your antibiotics? And your Tylenol?
He asks. Brendan rubs at his ear. It's bright red.
Ear hurts,
he says softly.
Brendan.
Spencer puts his hand on Brendan's jaw and makes him turn to look at him.
Did you take your pills? I can't, Brendan pouts. My throat hurts too much. Do you have any popsicles? Can we go get some? I can take my pills then.
The only place you are going is back to bed, Spencer says. You're here because you can't be trusted to look after yourself when you're sick.
If you're looking after me, you should get me popsicles.
Brendan can barely shape the words, but Spencer's pretty good at lip-reading after Brendan's third bout of strep in as many months.
Back to bed, or I'll carry you there, Spencer says.
Promises, Brendan whispers.
Like you could do anything about it if I did the state you're in.
Spencer stands, and after a brief struggle with the blanket, so does Brendan. Spencer opens the freezer and digs out a blue raspberry popsicle. Brendan makes a grab for it.
You have my favourite, he says.
It's almost like this isn't the first time you've been sick, Spencer says. You get this if you go back to bed. Brendan shuffles in the direction of the guest room and gets under the covers. Spencer hands him the popsicle.
Then take your pills, he says.
Brendan's too busy eating the popsicle to argue.
Hey, Spence,
he whispers after he puts a stick on the table and swallows his pills.
Stay with me a bit.
You need to sleep, Spencer says, but he sits on the edge of the bed anyway.
Just for a bit,
Brendan asks, already sleepy.
It's lonely.
Sure. Spencer brushes Brendan's hair out of his face and kisses his forehead. I'll stay. Working Overtime by Penny. This is for Ware Duck for More Joy Day 2012, who wanted Ray and Brian in the studio. I hope you like it. It wasn't till Ray set the last file to export, pushed the headphones down round his neck and tried to sit back that he realised how stiff he was. And also that everyone else seemed to have disappeared. There was a bottle of water, a banana and a donut perched on the console. Gerard, he said to himself. He said they gave up about 2 hours ago, Brian said, his voice halfway between fond and irritated. Ray felt Brian's hands on his shoulders, rubbing. He said. His shoulders were really stiff, and Brian's fingers dug in harder. I got kind of involved, Ray said. Something was off with the layering of Frank's part, but I think it's done now. I had to splice together 3 different takes. You know, Brian pushed his hands up to the back of Ray's neck, and Ray sighed as the tension there was rubbed away. There are these people called producers. You might have heard of them. He pressed more firmly, and Ray slumped over the deck. I like doing it, Ray said. It was only a few tracks, and you can really hear the guitars now. Frank was great. It deserved not to get lost. You're a nice guy, Ray Torre. Brian's lips pressed against the side of his neck, then further on along his jaw. He was still rubbing Ray's shoulders, and Ray felt the tension slowly start melting away. So are you. Ray turned around to kiss Brian properly. Unless you do this for all your bands. He could, for all that Ray knew. It wasn't like this was a frequent occurrence, but it was always good when it did happen. Ray had given up trying to figure out why it happened, why Brian would pick him instead of anyone else in his band. No. Brian stood back and Ray let him pull him to his feet. You're special. Ray laughed. Glad to hear it. Brian had to stretch up to kiss him. Ray was kind of used to being the tall one, especially with how tiny Frank was. But he still liked it. I actually do mean that, Brian said minutes later against his lips. One day you'll believe it. Ray shrugged. He was surrounded by sweet talkers, even if Brian didn't look like one, and he'd long ago given up expecting it to make sense. I do, he said instead, pulling Brian towards him. But you can keep trying to convince me, if you want. Oh, you know me. Brian's hands were already at his belt. I do love a challenge. In that case, Ray said, and bent down to kiss him again, I'm about to be very, very happy that this studio is soundproof.